Welcome back to Inside College Basketball Now with John Rothstein. Pleased to be joined by Oregon State head coach Justin Joyner as part of our new coaches series. Justin, welcome. What is it like to be introduced as a head coach?
It's unbelievable. It really is a dream come true for me. Actually, starting with being on this podcast here, John, with you. Obviously, I've been listening to these for quite some time, so it's great to be on here. But yeah, to be a head coach here at Oregon State at a program like this is really a dream come true, and have so many people to thank for it.
Now, you haven't coached a game yet, but I'm curious, what do you know now about being a head coach that you didn't know when you agreed to take the job?
Yeah, just the time. You know, I think as an assistant coach, you can specialize in some things, recruiting, you know, my side of the defensive side of the ball, player relationships. At this stage in the game, it's really been about the time and trying to manage my time the best I can. I'm lucky to have such a great staff and such a great administration, but the time aspect has been certainly a challenge.
You work for Dusty May at Michigan. You work for Randy Bennett at St. Mary's. What are the biggest things you are going to take from those two guys and implement in your own program at Oregon State?
Yeah, I'll start with Randy. You know, Randy gave me such an opportunity in 2017 when he hired me. I was coaching middle school AAU basketball at that point. And, you know, what I would take from him is just the consistency. You know, the 7 years I was with him, he was the same guy every day. He's consistent with his approach. He does what he does, and he probably does it better than anybody in the country. And I'm so excited for him to take over Arizona State with the resources that they're afforded and do great things there. Dusty's unbelievable in terms of just the modern day job and what it entails, right? From a roster building standpoint, year in and year out, but also from a relationships with the players, not just the players, but the agents and the circles of the players, being able to do all those things while also coaching ball at a really high level. We were certainly different at Michigan than we were at St. Mary's with the pace of play, positional size and the transition, but very similar in some ways in terms of just the approach of every day being the best you can possibly be.
Justin, how did Randy Bennett do what he did at St. Mary's?
Yeah, I would say consistency. I think, you know, when you look at a place that lacks resources, and it certainly did when he got the job, you can look at it two ways. You can look at it in terms of what you don't have, or you can celebrate the things that you do have. And I think when you look at a place like St. Mary's in the East Bay, it's a program, it's a place that loves basketball. And so I think he did a great job of recruiting the right type of people, both staff-wise and players, that love ball and love it at a high level. Because if you're in your place like Moraga, there's not a ton of distractions. You know, it's an opportunity to get players that love basketball and want to enhance their game and become great players. And doing that while also building a program with longevity and sustaining talent, recruiting freshmen, redshirting them. You know, 3 years later, those guys are still the same guys, just sharpened up and better players. I think he did it through just, you know, doing a great job with the resources he had. And then as he became more successful, he was able to extend those resources and continue to build.
I know you loved your time there as an assistant. You guys had great teams, built one of the most consistent programs in the country. But how imperative was it for your development to have the last 2 years at Michigan to get power conference experience under your belt?
Yeah, I thought I had to do it. Honestly, at that point in 2024, when I was, you know, finishing up at St. Mary's, I was looking towards some head jobs and some Big West type jobs. And those are great opportunities. But I just felt like, you know, going through the process of interviewing, I needed experience. I needed to diversify my experience. And one of the things I wanted to do is I wanted to make sure I was going onto a staff that was taking over a program, you know, taking over a program like Michigan that was 8-24 the year before was important to me. I wanted to make sure I was working for somebody that I really respected from afar and felt like I could learn a ton from. And that certainly was Dusty May. Yep. And the last thing I would say is more institutionally, I wanted to work for a public school. You know, I wanted to be at a high academic type public school, just learn that type of system and make sure that I was kind of expanding my knowledge of the educational system. So I felt like, you know, Michigan gave me a great opportunity to do that. And then certainly the success we had and the players we recruited and developed and the staff that I was around was also a huge part.
Well, at Michigan, you were there for 2 years. It was a new staff taking over a new program. But in those 2 years, you went to a Sweet 16 the first year. You won a Big Ten tournament title the first year. And obviously last year, you won a national championship. All of the personnel was not the same. What makes Dusty May able to, on an annual basis, not just build rosters, but mold them together so effectively?
The thing I would say about Dusty and really the entire staff, but it starts at the top, is I've never seen a head coach or even heard of a head coach being that much in the trenches with his players on a day-to-day basis. You know, before practice, you can see him working with Merez, working with Adai. After practice, he's working it with Elliot, working with Elliot Cadeau, working with Yaks. He's in the film room in the mornings with his players. He's in the film room after practice with his players. He's spending so much time one-on-one with them. He's really ingrained in the trenches with them, and I think that's hard to find in head coaches, especially with the caps he has to wear and the responsibilities that he has. But that's the one thing I would say that is really different. Obviously, he's extremely adaptable. He's able to change his style of play as it is with, you know, in terms of who he's playing with, what type of players he has. I think people looked at us crazy when we were bringing in Yaks and told everybody we were going to play him at the three. But, you know, Dusty understands basketball at the highest level, and our staff was able to bend our system to its personnel.
Do you feel any different as a coach now that you were part of a staff that won a national championship?
No, not really. I mean, I think I feel more different just like the experience that it was. I think that, you know, the reward is the journey, so to speak. And
yeah,
the journey of the 2 years at Michigan, again, taking that program over with Coach May and that staff at 8-24 and building it with really good players, but really good people and guys that understand the mission. And then ringing up in year two and being able to sort of finish the job. Really, the journey for me was more important than anything.
How did you balance being part of a staff that was chasing a national championship with pursuing the Oregon State job?
There wasn't much balance, I would say. You know, I mean, it's really just, you know, job to job. For me, it was, you know, when I'm in Michigan, try and focus as much as I can when I was in Ann Arbor or when I was on site at the NCAA tournament. But at the same time, understanding that I had a roster to start to think about building. I had a staff to build, and I had relationships to create on campus. So I think Dusty was really great for me in terms of allowing me to get off of campus and get here at Oregon State and start to do some of the job. You know, he understands that you win in spring. You know, you win in the spring with your ability to recruit, your ability to retain, your ability to build. And so he allowed me to have a chance to build in the spring.
Now, taking the Oregon State job is a tremendous opportunity for you. It's your first head coaching job, but there's a lot more to it than that. Your wife is the head soccer coach at the University of Oregon, and you have been part of a split family the last couple of years. You've been in Ann Arbor. Your wife's been in Eugene. You also have a young child. I am the father of a young child, and I can't even imagine going through what you guys have went through. What was it like?
It was hard. You know, it was hard. I would tell you, like, you know, 2 weeks into the job in 2024 in Ann Arbor, I felt like I made a huge mistake, you know, leaving our home in California. Wow. To take this opportunity. I would say borderline on depression for two weeks. And then once our players kind of got on campus and we started working with them and we started developing relationships with them and with the staff as well, it was a little bit easier. But, man, it was hard. I would tell you there's not many people that would allow me to kind of make that move. But Tracy, my wife, is unbelievable. What a partner and what a mother. And then Dusty, on the other hand, too, was very flexible in his approach and allowed me to you know, miss a practice here and there to go be a father and be a husband. So I'm really fortunate to both be married to Tracy and have been able to work for Dusty for those 2 years.
Why did you feel like you had made a mistake early during this two-year process?
Yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, waking up every day, you know, with your daughter and with your wife there, and then going from that to not, you know, and yeah, being, you know, a world away, so to speak, from your family was hard. It was hard, you know. So every day waking up kind of in this two-bedroom, you know, apartment by yourself was just really hard, and it's hard to get out of bed at times. But again, the people I worked with, both players and staff, and at the institution like Michigan, was enough for me to make that jump and make that sacrifice.
So take us inside right now, the phone call from you to your wife and daughter when you got the affirmation that you were going to be the next head coach at Oregon State.
Yeah, it was funny. I think it was a Tuesday morning. Scott Barnes, the AD here, gave me a call and offered me the job. And, you know, as we were on the phone and I was accepting the job, I was texting my wife, Tracy, saying that they offered me the job and I'm taking it. And she was really excited. And, like, you know, I finished the phone call and then I FaceTimed Tracy and she was in tears. Yeah. Naturally. And it was great. You know, we were celebrating. And then I told her, you know, the tears are over. Yeah. It's time to get to work. We have a job to do. Obviously, she has a job at the University of Oregon and I have a job at Oregon State. And we're trying to do this the best we possibly can.
Now, Oregon and Oregon State are not exactly friendly competitors in the state of Oregon. What is the house going to look like? How are you going to balance the green with the orange?
Yeah, no balance. There is no balance. I mean, my closet's going to look like what it's going to look like. It's going to be black. It's going to be orange. It's going to be some white. And Tracy's closet's going to look like what it's going to look like. And that's what it's going to be. You won't catch me in those colors. And I would not expect to catch her in these colors. So that is what it is. But at the same time, I will be supporting Oregon women's soccer. And I know she'll be supporting Oregon State men's basketball.
Justin, what was your perception of the Oregon State program when you were growing up in California?
Yeah, I always felt like, first and foremost, like the Pac-12, you know, to me, it was about that more so. Like, I felt like the Pac-12 was an unbelievable conference. I was raised on the Pac-12. I'm a California guy. Yeah. And I just felt like it was a great conference. It's the high major league in the West. And Oregon State was a part of that, obviously. And, you know, I had some familiarity with Coach Riley. I had, certainly had some familiarity with Coach Tinkle and some players that have played here, whether Gary Payton being from the Bay, Josie actually came here. He went to my high school. So I was familiar with the program, but I always felt like it was a sleeping giant. I just felt like, you know, anytime you have a basketball program that is at an institution like Oregon State, it is a college campus. It has a college feel. We got to give these people something to be excited about, these students and this fan base, something to be excited about. I think with a fun, vibrant style of play and obviously a winning product, we can get this place rocking again.
What's your thoughts on the roster you've put together?
Really like it. Yeah, I really like it. I thought it's really important, I think, in today's landscape to have the ability to play big. And certainly, you know, my experience at St. Mary's playing against the top of the league with Gonzaga, I know that you have to be big in order to compete with the top of the league. So we did a good job. I think Dennis Evans is a great player. He's got a chance to be really special, kind of getting into the back end of his college career. You know, certainly a rim protector, but I think there's some offensive punch there, whether it's scoring on the block, whether it's acting as a play finisher. And I think his ability to play in some dribble handoffs and kind of loosen himself up on some roles can be effective as well. Xavion Staten, obviously a very good player out of high school, went to BYU. It didn't necessarily go how we thought it would go. But nonetheless, being able to circle back and grab him out of the portal, a very high ceiling player, another elite rim protector. I think he's going to surprise some people with his ability to switch on the perimeter. I think he'll surprise some people with his ability to facilitate on the perimeter offensively. So we're really excited about the size up front. Jackson Rasmussen from Idaho is a good player, physical, can beat you up inside as well, kind of a tweener type. So I think he'll be a really good player. And then the backcourt, I think, is really special, honestly. I think it starts with JoJo Lake at the point, a guy that, you know, comes from an Oregon State family, right? You're talking about a guy whose dad played at Oregon State. His brother's going to play at Oregon State. This place means a lot to him, and I think him finishing his race here was really important to us and really important to him. So we're really excited about him. I think Daniel Freetag out of Buffalo is a guy that can really score the basketball at a high level. We're talking about a guy who scored 20 a game last year at Buffalo. He's got size, he's got physicality, he's got the ability to mix it up, rebound the basketball, but really score at a high level and get to the free throw line. We're going to need that from him. Legend Smiley, elite shooter. I'm a guy that we're really excited about, a guy that can really shoot the basketball, but I think he has more to his game. I think he's a guy that can play on the ball and dribble handoffs and pick and roll, be aggressive in transition and make plays. So really excited about him. And then the last kind of guy I would talk about on the perimeter is Deshaun Gorey out of Fresno State, who's special. I think, you know, the country is going to see a really special player with his size at 6'7", his ability to be efficient from two. I think he'll be able to expand his range as a three-point shooter, and he rebounds the ball for his size. So we're excited about kind of the core of our roster, and we're definitely excited about the total of our roster as well.
How do you plan to balance the portal moving forward with high school recruiting?
Yeah, the goal obviously is to build it through high school recruiting and retention, but at the same time being able to supplement through the portal. I'm not sure that's realistic in today's climate. You know, I think people gave us a lot of grief at Michigan having five starters that all came from the portal. But in order to flip a team, a roster quickly, you're going to have to supplement via the portal. Yep. So I think it's important to try and do both, but at the same time be adaptable, be flexible, and be able to put together the right roster for our team.
The new Pac-12. It's not the old Pac-12, but it is invigorating to see the Pac-12 back as a part of college sports. How much was that an additional hook to why you were so interested in this job?
Yeah, I was very interested in that. You know, like I said, I was raised on the Pac-12, and albeit it was a different Pac-12 at that time, it still is the West Coast Power League. And to me, that's really important. Again, raised in the West, raised on the Pac-12. It's a really good basketball league. You know, the hopes is that it's a 3-4, maybe, you know, depending on what programs come up, 5-bid league, but certainly should be a 3-4-bid league. And we're hopeful that we can get there very, very quickly.
Now, sometimes agreements and scheduling are carried over from prior regimes, but last year, Oregon State played a game at Arizona State. Bobby Hurley was the coach at Arizona State. Wayne Tinkle was the coach at Oregon State. And there is a return game where Arizona State will return to Corvallis. That means you are going to be on one side of the bench and Randy Bennett is going to be on the other side of the bench. What do you think that's going to be like for you?
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. I mean, it's a 40-minute basketball game. You know, it's us versus them, and that's what it's going to be. Obviously, you know, I owe the world to Coach Bennett and the opportunity he gave me at St. Mary's. But at the same time, you know, he's going to do a great job building his program in year one, and we're planning on doing a great job in building our program in year one. And hopefully it's a big game for us. It'll be a big game for our student body. It'll be a big game for our fan base, and it'll be a big game for our team. So we're looking forward to it.
Other than Arizona State and the annual game against Oregon, is there anything of note you can share about Oregon State's non-conference schedule?
Yeah, we'll be in a couple MTEs, the AcroSure event in Palm Springs. We'll be in the SoCal Challenge, I believe it's called, in Southern California. Those are a couple things we'll be in. And then, we're working on some non-conference bye games and maybe a home and home in there at some point as well. Looking forward to putting together a competitive schedule, a schedule that can help us get to the NCAA tournament in year one and prepare us for the Pac-12.
Justin, you know me, I'm a scheduling fiend. So when I study these things, I look at the makeup and what's available. Because there's going to be 16 regular season conference games, now that means there's 16 non-conference games to schedule. So there is real flexibility and a path for the Pac-12, especially with two quad one games on the books against Gonzaga, plus others you could add against San Diego State or Utah State, to schedule your way to the NCAA tournament. How much has that been a part of the conference room discussion for your staff when you're looking at scheduling?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, first thing you want to do is you want to put together a really good roster, right? Put together a good roster, a roster that you feel like can be at the top of the Pac-12, a roster that you feel like can get to the NCAA tournament. And I feel like we've done that. Once we do that, now we want to give ourselves the best chance at being an NCAA tournament team. And how we do that is through scheduling. So we're looking at creative ways to schedule games that will, you know, certainly help us build an at-large resume to be an NCAA tournament team. And I think there's some really good programs out here in the West. I think there's some, you know, some high major games we can play. And we're looking forward to being right there on Selection Sunday.
Do we have a location yet for next season's game against Oregon?
Supposed to be at the Moda Center. We'll see what happens. That's kind of what we're looking at right now. Hopefully that works out.
Okay. Well, I know you're getting ready for your first season as a head coach, but I'm very fascinated in all my years doing this at how coaches hold on to their tough losses more than they appreciate their great wins. Since you've gotten into coaching, give me one great win that you always hold near and dear to your heart, and give me a tough loss that you haven't been able to shake.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna stay off the NCAA tournament because that's an easy one. That's a national championship, right? I'll go back to, you know, the 2024 year was an interesting one for me. I was kind of in the hunt for some mid-major jobs at St. Mary's, and you know, when I got there in 2017, the goal was to be able to dethrone Gonzaga. That's just what it was. And how you do that is you win the league outright and you win the conference championship. And we did that in 2024. We won the league outright in 2024, and then we won the conference championship, conference tournament championship. So that was a huge win in 2024. I would say the toughest loss was probably the next game we played in the NCAA tournament against Grand Canyon. Yeah, it was a tough loss. Again, I think in my mind, I knew there were some opportunities coming my way, and it might be my time might be done at St. Mary's. And to finish it that way was really heartbreaking.
What is it like? And you just referenced, you know, a great win and a tough loss, literally 10 days away from each other. What is it like to be on that emotional roller coaster in March Madness where you have a career high and then 9 or 10 days later, you have a career low?
Yeah, it's wild. I think the ability to stay neutral through this thing is certainly valuable, but also not necessarily realistic, right? So just trying to roll with it. And I think the most important thing is keeping your guys in the right mindset and the right framework as we move forward. And that one was tough because some really good players ended their career that night. And that's always tough.
Final thing, Justin, what are the biggest things you want to accomplish in year one as head coach at Oregon State?
Yeah, we want to make sure that we want to build this thing in year one into one of the premier programs in the Pac-12, with the understanding that if we do that, that's going to give us a chance to play in March, and that is the goal, to play in the NCAA tournament. So obviously it's a tall task. Some great coaches in this league, some great programs in this league. We got our hands full with that, but that is the goal. We want to make sure the bar is high for us, and we feel like we have the roster and the staff to be able to do that.
Well, Justin, it's going to be a lot of fun to cover. Congratulations on the job. Really appreciate a couple minutes. And as always, look forward to staying connected along the way.
Appreciate you, John, as always.
You got it. That's Oregon State head coach Justin Joyner. I'm John Rothstein, and this is Inside College Basketball Now.